Good evening, everybody. Welcome to Let's Talk Assassin's Creed, your number one podcast for all things Assassin's Creed.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to episode 157 of Let's Talk Assassin's Creed. Declan, we're back. Well, I say we're back because we've already recorded this episode and there was an audio issue. So we're recording it again. We're a few days late, but these things happen when you're learning new audio tools and new ways of recording and editing. So we're back. It's been a couple of weeks or 2.5 weeks since our last episode where we looked back at the Leila Hassan trilogy with Jodie and Amit. And what are we doing this week, Declan?
We are doing the dreaded Q&A. Dun, 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 dun.
Oh, yes. Ask us anything.
Literally anything. Have you seen this quiz?
There's some good questions in there. I'm looking forward to it. We sought questions from our Discord, from Twitter, and from our community posts on the YouTube channel. We've got a couple of pages of questions. And should we just go into it and make a start?
Can do, sounds like a plan. So the first one is from Just a User. They ask, name one favourite assassin and one favourite Templar besides Elise and Arno, James. So I think I'll let you go through this one first, but it can't be right. Arno.
Good question, it's Just a User. Let's have a think. I'm not allowed to name Elise or Arno, that's harsh. Favourite assassins... You know, even though we've already recorded, and of course we've had to discard those recordings, I can't remember what I said last time. So I am genuinely having to rethink this question now. You see, I'm drawn to Edward because I like his story of personal growth and maturity. I'm drawn to Evie because Kane's swords are cool, and anyone who can parkour in heels is awesome. Ezio's story of birth throughout his whole life as he grows in wisdom is fantastic. Name one favourite assassin and one favourite Templar. I think for assassin I'm going to have to go for Edward. I am sort of excluding or putting Cassandra and Bayek kind of in their own, because Cassandra's not an assassin technically. Bayek I suppose kind of is at the end, but I think I'm saying Edward. And for Templars, that's really hard. I'm trying to think of a Templar who, I mean, I can't say Haytham, that's too obvious. Starrick was too much of a pantomime baddie. I'm ignoring the Order of the Ancients because most of them I don't remember. Can you think of a good Templar, Declan? I mean, you can say Haytham, but
I would have to say the Countess from Magnus Major's conspiracy novels. I think she's a really, really well written Templar who isn't in that trope of comically bad or the trope of comically good. You know, she's a mix of Haytham Kenway with somebody as serious as Otzelberg, in my opinion. But I think she is my favourite Templar.
Yeah, it's a good shout. We're both currently reading The Resurrection Plot, which is out in June or July. It's the next part of the Engine of History trilogy, and yeah. I want to say it's Constanz von Fisler is the lady's name. I'm only 2/3 through the book, so I don't know how it ends, but that's a good shout. See, Cesare he's a scenery chewing pantomime villain, and although it's a joy to sort of watch his cutscenes as he literally chews the scenery, he never really kind of grabbed me. I suppose I have to go for Haytham because he has that classic line, you know, we will be here, we don't need anything, we just need the world to be as it is. You know, and I felt like he he actually, some of the other Templars in Assassin's Creed 3, they kind of offered interesting justifications for their actions. Favourite assassin, Declan?
You know my answer to this, so get it over with, all of them joined in a diplomatic stance, because they all have their own unique stories, their own unique personalities. I just don't want to put them all on a pedestal, because I like them all for their own unique nature. If that makes sense.
Very diplomatic.
I am diplomatic. There is one I am scared of the most, though.
Scared? Yeah.
Cassandra. Come on. With that spear of Leonidas, I wouldn't want to annoy her.
Indeed. I'm just remembering what she does to Cleon at the end of the Battle of Amphipolis when she stamps on his head and drowns him. Anyway, that's a nasty way to go. All right, what was the next question?
The next question from Just User again is, what character in your opinion deserves to have a whole game to his name, and why is it Haven Kenway? Now, quick clarification before you answer. I've only just realised in this question, he actually put, deserves to have a whole game to his name, and why is it Haven Kenway? When I first read it, I thought he was genuinely meaning what character. But it's definitely worded to let's praise Haven Kenway to his own game.
I think, I don't know Just a User so well, but I think Haven might be his favourite character. Just a User, he listens to us from Ukraine. So hope you're well, hope you're safe, Just a User. Slava Ukraini. Haven Kenway. I mean, the book is great, isn't it? Forsaken.
I love Forsaken.
Would you make a game of that one, do you think?
No. Not to be rude. I think it's more something that's worthy of a television show than it is a game. It's just, I don't think a game could do it justice.
Mm. Oh, a television show. Yeah. Who would you cast as Haven?
Adam Driver.
Interesting.
Adam Driver, yeah.
Okay, all right.
But I have like limited knowledge of actors, so
I'm the wrong person to ask. Same, I don't probably watch enough television or film to make good cast recommendations. But you need someone definitely that can be super suave, dangerous. But also a charming gentleman. All right, Just a User asks a third and final question, and actually we had the same question from Altair Stealth. So thank you for your questions, Just a User, and Altair Stealth, thank you for your question. Also just want to say thank you for your support of the Community Relief fundraiser that we ran a couple of months ago. I know you ran a supporting campaign, a parallel campaign on your channel, and we really appreciate that, and you spreading the word to your audience as well. So kind of a two-part question. Both Just a User and Altair Stealth asked a similar question. So first of all, Declan, from both of them, what is your favourite Assassin's Creed game and why?
All of them joint. Diplomatic again, I know.
The politician's answer. All right, now we have already recorded this. So I knew you were going to say that, and I have thought of a little follow-up cheeky question for you.
Oh, no.
So there's, depending on how you count it, you know, there's 12, 13, if you count the Chronicles games, is it 15 sort of main games?
Yeah.
You say they're all your favourites. I respect that answer. But are there any that are definitely not your favourites? Or maybe to phrase it another way, are there any that you'd probably never replay?
Just one, and that's Origins. I have no disrespect to Origins. I think it's one of the best looking games and one of the most fun games to play. But after 100% in the game, I found every secret and every nook and cranny. So at this point, it's like, what's the point of playing since I know everything there is? Whereas other games, I've not 100% it, so I'm always finding little nuggets of secrets.
Interesting. So it's not because there's a problem with the game, it's just that you've done everything the game has to offer. No, fair enough. All right. I should answer that question as well. I'm going to give like a three-part answer here to both of you. So if we kind of roughly divide the franchise into the open world games, the newer ones, and the older city-based games, my favourite of the open world games is Odyssey. Why? I mean, it's probably as much my heart as my head. It was the first Assassin's Creed game I played, and I thought it was a fantastic adventure. It was a joy to play. It was fun to explore the world and go on, you know, the main story, the side quests. I loved, still enjoy the melee, the ranged, the stealth. Yes, it doesn't have all the tools that some of the other games have, but it works. And, you know, clearing a fort, hiding in the bushes and sneaking over the ropes is a joy in that game. So that's my favourite of the open world games. Of the older games, Unity is my favourite, because more than anything, in terms of the way the game is structured, the way the tools are made accessible to you, the way Arno can move, it's the one that makes me feel like an assassin. The way I think an Assassin's Creed game should make you feel, if you know what I mean. So yeah, Unity is my favourite of the city games. Odyssey is my favourite of the newer games. I will give an honourable mention to Black Flag, because I do like Edward. Sailing is a joy, and Black Flag story, as everyone knows, is fantastic. Those are kind of my top three. And then Declan, just to use, I had a couple of like extra bullet points in this question. So do you have a favourite book and or comic based on Assassin's Creed?
Can I say books? Because it's a duology so far. So it used to be, and I apologise, Heresy, because Heresy is just chef's kiss, one of the best ACs. But it's actually now the Engines of History duology, and my Aegis Conspiracy joint with... I think it's just because, even though I love Heresy, but it's, you know, based on a game, the game world, and I always feel like the game world, you know, has a lot of plot armor to it. You know, certain things can and can't happen. Whereas what Kate's done with her two books is there's no plot armor. You literally don't know a single thing. Everything's brand new. And it's really invigorating to read a story with no plot armor. Like, you don't know what the characters are going to do. And they could just be killed off any minute. So, I mean, that's why it's up there with my best AC games. It's just so new and so fresh.
Awesome. The her books are great. I definitely recommend them to anyone listening. We did interview Kate Hartfield, the author, August last year, I think. If you have a look at our older episodes and you're interested in that, and that, we had a really good conversation. I'm hoping we can get her back on the show when Resurrection Plot is released, but we'll see. So for you, no comics?
No, too expensive.
That's fair enough. For me, books. Yeah, it's, I mean, I haven't read all of the novels. There are probably half a dozen novels out there that I still haven't read. Last Descendants I haven't read. I think I've read all of the novels that follow the games. Forsaken, yes. Heresy, yes. Heresy is excellent. But yeah, definitely recency bias is a thing, and the Engine of History duology are excellent. Comics, I think we've said this in the past, haven't we, for both of us. I mean, for you, I mean, for me as well, some of them are horrendously expensive. Also, I'm just not that interested in comics as a medium, as a format. They don't really engage my brain the way a novel does or a game. So I do have the Origins comic, would you call it an anthology? I think it's all four of the original releases, but bound together.
It's an omnibus.
So I've got that version of the Origins comic that tells Aya's kind of follow-on story, or Aminet's story, but that's the only one I've got. So I guess that's my favourite just by default. I've never read any of those. I would kind of like to read the comic series that completes Juno's arc and tells us about, Charlotte Dela Cruz. to sort of fill in that gap in the modern day story, but that's the only one that, particularly interests me. All right, what's next?
So this is from JPMCFT. He asks, what do you make for the novels? Should they be prequels or sequels? And what do you make about the two versions of Unity novel? So,
who should take that one?
What I'm going to say is I kind of disagree, and I don't mean in disrespect to the writers, but I don't think novels should be prequels or sequels, because when you look at the game retelling ones, there's a lot of inaccuracies, you know, lots of stuff didn't happen. But also with game retelling being prequels and sequels, there's plot armor, you know, like with the Golden City being a prequel to Mirage, a sequel to Mirage and a prequel to Valhalla, you know, there's that plot armor that Bastion can't get hurt, so it's going to be perfectly fine. And that takes, for me, tension away, because you can't put them characters in a life and death situation, because, you know, they're going to be A-okay. So I kind of think novels should do their own thing, you know, create their own stamp on the franchise. And with the Unity novels, I really just think it's translation, or I don't know, we've discussed it and we still have not found an answer.
It's bizarre, yeah. Isn't it? Why was an extra version written for the North America market, but the rest of the world gets a... And it's only a couple of paragraphs, isn't it? We should probably explain. In the sort of rest of world edition, this is... So the Unity novel is kind of like a prequel and parallel story, but it tells Unity's story from Elise's point of view through her journal entries. And she... Oh my God, I should know the year. Either 1788, I think it is. It's the year before the revolution. Well, the year before that. She takes a trip to England to try and deal with a problem with some other Templars, the Carrolls. And in the Rest of World edition, she takes a ship from Calais to Dover in the UK, and that's it. In the US edition, there's, like I say, one or two short paragraphs added where she has a short fling with the ship's captain. Why does that second version exist? No one
simping
knows.
Simping fan fiction.
It's very strange.
That's it. It's just simping fan fiction.
Yeah, could be. To answer JPMCFT's question, personally, I like the Rest of World edition, but that's just, you know, me being a romantic. I like the idea that Arno and Elise were made for each other and only each other. But hey, you know, pick whichever version you personally like it. It doesn't really change the outcome of the story, unfortunately. I'm with you on the first part of their question. I actually prefer the early novels that basically retold the game stories. They're okay, they're fine, but they're not that exciting. The ones that branch off, like, we've already said it, Forsaken. What's the one for Syndicate that tells
Underworld.
Henry Green's
That's
Underworld?
So
you know, they tell side stories of the characters. Of the Valhalla, you know, the world of Valhalla, there's so much transmedia about Valhalla and Eivor's time. Sword of the White Horse, great book. Gearman's Saga, great book. There's a third one, I think, which I always forget. Oh, you said it earlier, Golden City, you know. Another good book. They're fun because they aren't telling you stories you've already played, you know, cutscene by cutscene. I think it's unsatisfying if you're here to play games and you spend your $50, $60, $70, $80 on a video game, and then the main protagonist story, I mean, this is the Juno problem again, is finished in some other media. That just feels quite cheap to me. You know, I'm here for the protagonist to get their hero's journey, or their decline, or their rise, or whatever the story's telling us. And I feel like the kind of the contracts that we have for paying the game is we should get that satisfying confusion, not have the conclusion finished in a novel or a comic or some other form of media.
So the next one is 66 Days asks, there is so much Assassin's Creed lore hidden with non-game content. What could help newer or more casual fans of the Brotherhood discover and explore AC books, comics, and other content?
That is a great question, 66 it's... Days. I tell you that the tricky thing here is that I'm going to be sort of critical of Ubisoft here. They have a media or a franchise licensing team that, you know, make deals with publishers, make deals with authors, comic book companies and so on, board game companies, to produce transmedia, novels, comics, like I say, board games, whatever, which are all, in theory, you know, connected to the central plot, the central set of characters, and again, in theory, don't conflict. So the stories can be side stories or main character stories, but they're all consistent within this universe. But I think Ubisoft do quite a bad job of helping fans discover all that content. Let's pick one that we had Mike, the Lord Raylus, on as a guest for last year when we talked about the Brotherhood of Venice board game. That contains, as well as entirely new characters, I think it's Alessandra is the lead character. It's got a bit of Claudia Auditore story in there. It's got some modern day for Leila Hassan in there. But how would you know that? If you went to Ubisoft's site and said, hey, look, I'm a fan of the modern trilogy of games and Leila Hassan's story, how do I find more about her story? What are the other sources of media? Well, guess what? Some of it's in a board game expansion, but Ubisoft don't tell you that. So I think Ubisoft could do a better job of giving, I don't know, a database, an interactive timeline, you know, constantly refreshing people that there is other content out there. So therefore it falls on nerds, sometimes us, but we only dabble a little bit, to be honest. And that's only in the last year, isn't it? We've started to look at the novels more. There are definitely much better content creators, editors, writers out there than us that are covering the transmedia. I'm just going to call out a couple. Access the Animus try to stay on top of transmedia releases. The ones who came before, and again, Mike, who's been on our show many times, he writes book reviews and other reviews on transmedia for the ones who came before. So check out their websites. They try to stay on top of it, but there is an insane amount of transmedia out there. I will never consume it all, to be honest, and I'm okay with that because there's so much. What do you think, Declan? How else could people try and stay on top of the franchise and discover new content?
Well, personally, I think I would love Ubisoft to create a YouTube channel playlist where they do what they did in Assassin's Creed 3, where they had that little CGI trailer, which was like, caught you up on AC1 to AC3 story, and it was like a 2-minute trailer, and I was like, if they did that as a little timeline trick, even though like the story so far is it's Desmond's story, and it's like a 5-minute CGI video of everything that happened from AC1 to AC3, and then they didn't finish yet, so it's Black Flag to Syndicate. I would think that would go down a treat. I would watch that a lot. But I think the best place on top of all, and it's where I'm not ashamed to hold up my hands and say I've used their resources for some information from the for the show, and I've credited them, would be the AC Wiki. That is legendary. Yeah. They have, I don't know how they did it, but they've managed to collect a lot of data, even from the games with a little bit more choice-based systems. They've managed to correlate a lot of that. But it is my go-to place for transmedia knowledge, because I don't know where else to go. So there's a lot of, in my opinion, the best bet to do is if you just pick up Valhalla and think to yourself, I'm lost, and you stumble upon an Assassin's Creed community, if you ask for help, 9 times out of 10, we as a community would probably find a way to help you. If it's our own knowledge, a content creator sending you to a channel or the Wikia, ask, and we fellow fans of AC will nerd out with you and help out as much as possible.
Mm.
We are nerds. In it together.
Yeah. That's actually a great point. The Assassin's Creed fans do get a bit of a bad reputation, and sometimes it's deserved. There is certainly plenty of negativity out there, but my personal experience is you can block or ignore the people that enjoy negativity. And if you do that, there are so many nice people out there. And if you were just to join a Discord or go onto the subreddit or use Twitter and just say, hey, I'm looking to follow the story of, I don't know, Ezio. What did he do in Cyprus? Well, that's covered in, is it Bloodlines, the DS game? Or the other one? I always get Bloodlines confused with Chronicles. Oh, that was Altair's Chronicles. Sorry. So let's say you want to follow up on Ezio's journeys in Cyprus, which is covered by a mobile game that would be quite hard to play nowadays. You can read the wiki, but if you were just to go onto one of those communities and say, hey, is this story covered anywhere? Well, people will chip in and say, yeah, it's actually in this novel, or it's in these series of comics. So there's plenty of, like Declan says, plenty of nerds out there that would just love to help people find more stories and more media. That's probably the best way to do it. All right. Next question. This is from Saint Briago. How are you guys feeling about Mirage? Do you think it will be delayed? Also, do you know Graham Hancock and his theory about a lost civilization? Maybe you could explain it in the podcast and how it ties with Assassin's Creed. Go on, Declan.
So, Mirage, I'm hyped. It's Assassin's Creed. I'm at this point 15 years. I don't think I'm ever going to be disappointed. Do I think it'd be delayed? No, because I'm not trying to poke fun, but you have to have a bit of news for a game to be delayed. And because we've had no news, you can't really delay something that we've got no news about. So I don't think it's going to be delayed, and I think we just give Ubisoft the time they need to get it right, because it's better to have a game that's right than a game that's rushed. So that's all I can really say in Mirage at the moment, to be fair, because I don't know much. Do you know much about the Graham Hancock theory?
No, nothing. I'd honestly never heard the name until Saint Briago asked this question.
Well, it's the moment you put on your tinfoil hats. I'm only kidding. okay. So one of the most popular things about humanity in general is we love to question if there's more civilizations out there. You know, the whole ancient aliens type of theory. Well, Graham Hancock had a more AC's type theory, where it was before the Ice Age, there was another apocalyptic type event, and civilization helped the hunter-gatherers with tools and knowledge. And in my opinion, that really could tie in, as that other civilization that passed on the knowledge to hunter-gatherers would be the Isu. But how I could see it tying in Assassin's Creed lore is more of a unity between Assassins and Templars to shut that information down from the common public. Because it would do nobody any good if humans knew about the Isu. It would cause chaos that neither freedom nor order could control, if that makes sense.
It does. The only thing I'll add about conspiracy theories is mostly they can be fairly easily debunked simply by the fact that humans are really bad at keeping secrets. And if more than a few people know something, it's probably going to leak. So I generally don't go in for conspiracy theories. It's interesting to theorize how did civilizations with nothing more than pulleys and horses, you know, build the pyramids or whatever. But there are ways of explaining it that don't need aliens. Or you can watch the film Stargate and just enjoy that. On the Mirage point, I'm looking forward to it a lot. I'm looking forward to a linear story, a shorter story, hopefully a focus on stealth and parkour. And, you know, like we said with our one of our earlier questions, you know, so just to give a bit of backstory, we recently ran the Assassin's Creed community relief fundraiser. That was a hell of an intense sort of 4 weeks, 5 weeks of planning and running the event. And for the week after, you know, I hadn't touched a video game in probably the 5 or 6 weeks that event was running. And I haven't actually told you this, Declan. I didn't say this the first time we recorded this answer. So just to kind of get back into to gaming and just for fun, I replayed all of the assassination sandbox missions in Unity because I love Unity. And just going back into those, having those big set pieces where you've got a huge, you know, mansion, chateau to infiltrate, the guards move around. And, you know, it's like a massive game of chess, isn't it? The guards are the chess pieces and you've got to move them around the chessboard and eliminate them or block them or whatever to get to the target. And I just love that that big set piece that that Unity gives you. Syndicate does not quite to the same scale, but Syndicate does a similar thing. And it's just a joy to replay those missions and kind of unpick them and try new things. And I'm hoping, but I'm keeping my hopes in check, I'm hoping that Mirage offers a bit of that magic. I haven't pre-ordered it, I would say. Have you pre-ordered it, Declan?
May have.
Okay, interesting. Interesting. Do you think it will be delayed? It's difficult to know, isn't it? Because no release date has been confirmed. There's been a number of release dates rumoured. So, you know, from a, you know, quote-unquote technical point of view, the game hasn't been delayed so far. Ubisoft have not announced any release date, so therefore it can't be delayed. The latest rumour I saw was maybe the summer. Personally, I don't mind how long it takes. I'm in no rush. I would rather they take a bit longer and it arrives in a high state of polish. In my experience of Valhalla was it was a very rough game in the early months. Many, many bugs, quite a few kind of performance issues. That was at least my experience playing on PC. Maybe it was more stable on console and it improved a lot, but it did take them a long time to address, for example, the detection bugs and so on. So my hope is that Mirage arrives as a really tight, really reliable game that we can replay and really just enjoy using the tools and enjoy exploring the world and, you know, stabbing some bad guys. But my gut instinct now, and I have no knowledge, inside knowledge, is that if they've delayed it this long, will they just delay it until the usual kind of November Christmas release window? That's my guess. All right, what's next?
So the next question is from Servalan. It is, what is the velocity of a laden swallow?
Well, now, this is a very serious question. So my only response to Servalan is a European swallow or an African swallow? And we'll leave it there.
Next question. And then we'll just get tons of people curious at what's going on. Ah, good old Monty Python.
Aye. This is a question I actually added just earlier because I was interested to get an update from you, Declan. What free-to-play games do you play?
Oh, Jesus. I play a lot. Okay, so let's narrow it down. Mobile or console? Or both?
Both, but I guess I'm more interested in console, but you just tell me whatever you want.
So mainly on console, I'm playing the X Defiant Closed Beta, which is Ubisoft's new first-person shooter, and it's just fun. I'm also playing Warframe, which is a space ninja MMO, which, honestly, it's got insane parkour, guns, and swords. It's just fun. And then mobile is just random mobile games. I play too much mobile, I won't lie. But I think at the moment mobile, I've got a Doctor Who idle game because I'm obsessed with Doctor Who, and it's not that great at times, but it's the only Doctor Who mobile game that's free. And a Magic the Gathering match free game that I've been playing now for 3 years.
Oh, yes.
I've been playing it for 3 years now, and I'm in one of the top coalition like guilds of that area. And I've not spent a penny, so that's interesting. Don't spend money, and I'm one of the best platinum players in the game, so yay.
I suppose that's the difference, isn't it? You generally with free to play you exchange cash to save you time, and if you're willing to put the time in you don't need to spend any cash.
See, in my opinion, I always think that's a really bad misconception based on some games, because, you know, a lot of people, when they do, as you say, look at free-to-play games, they watch, they think that, oh, you know, they're going to be ruled by cash, don't they? Like, oh, there's going to be huge cash shops, and you're going to get nowhere while spending cash. But it seems that there's a lot of games out there that do have a cash because they need it, because you can't expect them to give developers nothing. But some of the games I've played, you know, you look at the cash shop and you think, I don't really need it. You know, I could if I want to, but I don't need it. And, you know, with the Magic the Gathering, there's a lot of cash shops. You know, sometimes new characters come in at like £49, and a lot of people will be like, oh, that's a lot of money. You know, if you don't have that money, you're not going to do well. But, you know, you can play the game without spending money, because all time, I think I put about 4 hours in a week and I beat some of the best players. So you just got to know what you're looking out for. A lot of games that are free to play do have nice monetization. So there's just a few bad eggs out there that are just ridiculously stupid.
I used to play World of Warships.
Ooh, yeah.
Which is an online PvP warship simulator, sometimes called the thinking man's free-to-play game. Now, that, I think that used to be sort of worn as a badge of pride, whereas I think nowadays it's kind of used a bit sarcastically because the number of players that are incapable of thinking is quite high. But anyway, because it's sort of World War One, World War Two ship combat simulator, you're firing every 30 seconds, not 10 times a second, is it, like if you're playing Call of Duty or something. So it's definitely a slower paced game, but I used to play that a lot, and I enjoyed it for a long time. But do you know what I did the other week? I saw a post on the Steam subreddit of how you could look at your historical purchases. So I did that, and I probably spent £300 on that game over 2 years. Wow. Which is and that's microtransactions, and that was me being dumb and lazy and not willing to grind. I don't play the game anymore. I probably uninstalled it a year ago because they've been gradually tweaking the in-game economy. They've been gradually making it harder for free to play because they want to sell you the battle pass. They want to sell you a premium. And they've been making it harder and harder to kind of progress as a free-to-play player. And I just got fed up with some of the other mechanics changes. So I uninstalled it and don't play it anymore. But yeah, when I saw how much I'd spent over several years, I thought, jeepers, this is insane. I'm glad I'm out of it, if I'm honest. Because I think if I was still playing it and invested in it, I guess I'd still be spending, you know, five a here, ten a here. Who cares? You don't notice, do you? And that's how they get you. So and yeah, that was a wake-up call for how quote-unquote free-to-play can really eat away at your cash.
And to play devil's advocate, a lot of people give developers slack, like a lot of abuse for monetization models and all that. But I read a Tokyo business sort of thing, you know, where they analyze free-to-play games. And they found out that a lot of the times a developer could be like really nice at the start, and they could say like, oh, here's a battle pass for £20, and they could just do it as an off chance for a little bit of cash. But if they saw a million people spending that £20, they get a little bit like, all right, we'll spend a little bit, we'll put something else in, something like, I don't know, like a £5 cosmetic skin, and then a million people buy that £5 cosmetic, they suddenly start seeing that that's what people want, because there's so much engagement. And then it does have that knock-on effect that free-to-play players like, well, I don't have that money. So it's, in my opinion, to play devil's advocate, I think developers just have that struggle of balancing, because there is a lot of people who think with the cash, but you've got to balance it where you've got to think with people who can't play with the cash. So sometimes I don't think monetization is just a developer point. I think it's just when you see a million people buying a £20 battle pass, you just think, well, all right, my gameplay base must enjoy spending cash. It's, in my opinion, it's not too far of a leap if you're a game developer, I think.
Absolutely. It's such a, I mean, the other example I've got, and I haven't actually played it regularly for a couple of months, but I do enjoy, just for just as casual, I don't do it competitively or anything, but is Fortnite. And the only money I've ever spent was to get the Aloy set. So the Aloy skin and, what do you call it, Backblaze and whatever. But I just play free-to-play, and sometimes I just want a casual shoot 'em up, and that's fine for me. That kind of scratches that itch. But you can spend a fortune in that game as well. Battle passes and cosmetics and whatever. But yeah, I've become older and wiser and less interested in microtransactions. All right. Next question is from White Wolf Whispers. Wolfie, who joined us for our interview and chat with Darby a couple of months ago when we looked back at Revelation. So hello, Wolfie. She asks, when you cut a sandwich in half, do you cut it down the middle or diagonally?
The diplomatic answer is both.
Tell us more.
I have kids, so I cut it with however the kids enjoy it. Or I do a really cool trick that my partner showed me, and it's like genius. You get like a slice of bread, and you whack cheese on top of it, and then you cut it diagonal, fold it on top of each other, and cut it in half. And it makes two small sandwiches. So that's nice. Both. And for me, as I said last time, I actually prefer not to cut a sandwich. I just put my food, I go caveman, you know, food in, go eat, done.
You monster.
British.
Possibly the same thing. I will answer the question very briefly. Down the middle if I'm cutting it quickly, and diagonally if I'm feeling fancy.
Ooh, fancy.
All right. Next question is from Jason, who was on the show a few months ago on our episode about Rebellion. This is a serious question, Declan, okay? So we've got to think seriously. What do you think is the biggest challenge Assassin's Creed has going forward?
I think I'm going to stick with the answer that I gave when we first recorded, and that would be the industry, because I do agree that, you know, when you've got players that, a fan base that likes, some like the smaller linear games and some like the bigger games, you know, that is a hard thing to try and balance. But I think industry is where it's the most hardest, because there's trends that developers like to keep up with. As seen with the monetization model in Valhalla, a lot of people like spending cosmetic money, but there is a backlash that some people don't, so that's hard for Assassin's Creed to get right, because to them, people want to spend the money. But it's also the fact of a lot of people want games to have a specific frame rate, specific quality, specific graphics these days, that Assassin's Creed has to make them games that people want. They want like 60 FPS crisp 4K games. But if they try to do that in a, I don't know, a small Unity style game, it may not be as popular as a big open world with 4K graphic and realistic trees. So I think the industry, the way the industry works, is probably the hardest challenge.
Understood. I can't actually remember what I said when we recorded before, so I may be giving a different answer this time. And I was thinking about this as you were speaking, Declan. We know that there's 3 or 4 or maybe 5 different projects in development, and there was recently some rumours that were covered by multiple channels of potentially something insane like 10 or 11 different projects in development. Now, there's always multiple projects, you know, being examined, or, you know, pre-production or researched. You know, not all of those go forward into sort of full production and turn into something you can actually play. But my kind of thought on that, especially we've heard rumors of a VR game, there's a Netflix game, there's this Jade mobile game. It's not really a challenge for Ubisoft, because ultimately they're gonna sell lots of games and make lots of money. But I suppose the challenge as a franchise as a whole is they are breaking their franchise into a series of islands. how many, yes, lots of people have Netflix subscriptions, although not as many as, not everyone does. Do people really want a game on Netflix through their television? Do people want to play Jade on their mobile phone with a, we've said this before in our episode, I've got a beautiful PC here, I've got a PS5. Why would I want to play an open world game on my little 5-inch, iPhone screen? VR, how many people have VR headsets? Yes, I know there are plenty out there, but as a proportion of the overall PC gamer base and all the console players out there, it's tiny. So my thought is here, and it's really more for the players, but I hope Ubisoft is considering this, is how do you stay in touch with this consistent narrative that this franchise is supposed to have if you've now got different stories being told on platforms that are inaccessible to large amounts of the player base? I guess we'll all be watching YouTube summaries of the story that's told in Jade, or the story that's told in I forget what the alleged code name was for the VR project, but the Netflix game. Personally, I don't want to play games on Netflix. I guess I'll be watching an Access the Animus story summary or lore analysis video to stay in touch. And that's kind of a shame, because I've got a lovely library of all my games on Ubisoft Connect on my PC. And that library will soon be incomplete, because you won't be able to play them all on PC. And I think that's a real shame.
There is 2 points I did want to raise about Jade and, Jade and the Netflix, if that's okay. The first point, as I've probably discussed before, Google Play is making a move to PC as an, not a port, but as an official platform. So there is a potential there that if Ubisoft doesn't want to do a Diablo Immortal and make a PC build, Google Play will have Jade on PC through the Google Play official store. So there is that possibility. It's not the best, but
interesting.
The Netflix one is the worst one. I think I've touched on it before, and that is, you can find Netflix games on Google Play Store right now and download them for free. However, once you've downloaded them, you are then asked immediately to sign into Netflix to play the game. That offers a really bad missed marketing error, especially since Tomb Raider Reloaded, which is a isometric auto shooter, did a deal with Crunchyrolls. I think it was Crunchyrolls that made it, to platform the game as a Netflix game without adverts. But you can download both for free, and you wouldn't know one's Netflix and one's not Netflix without the first screen saying, hey, now sign in. So with a Netflix AC game, you are running the risk of someone's going to type in AC into mobile, see this Assassin's Creed Netflix game and download it, thinking, hey, I got to play it, and then get a big warning screen saying, hat, now sign into Netflix to play. And then that will annoy some fans, because some fans may not be aware of the Netflix deal, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So it does push issues that there's going to be some pushback on it. Because I've actually raised a few complaints about mobile games I've downloaded that weren't marketed as Netflix games till I've opened them.
Understood. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next year or so, as allegedly some of these projects come to pass. Yeah. It kind of connects back to the earlier question from 66 Days, who was asking, how can newer fans stay on top of the transmedia? It's going to be as much of a challenge to stay on top of the games in the next few years, potentially. Some of the projects that were announced at the AC15 thing, they may not happen, might they? We don't know. Until they're actually released, anything's possible. But it's going to be a sort of, I'd say, confusing time.
Much definitely. So who knows what will happen? Batten down the hatches, people.
Yeah. Well, certainly, at least on this show, as much as we can, we'll try and stay on top of it. But it could be. With due respect to you, my friend, and to our listeners, I will not be spending £100 on a VR headset to play this VR game if it comes out. I just can't afford it. So there we are.
I'll play Jade.
You're our mobile gamer, mate. Yes, you stay on top of Jade. Maybe we'll divide the work up then. Maybe I will have to play the Netflix game as I've got the subscription. But how do you do it? Presumably, do you use your TV controller or do you connect a mobile phone to the telly or a controller? I have no idea how Netflix gaming
works. So it's not done from your TV at all. You go to Google Play and you type in, I'm going to get one up right now, Stranger Things, because I've got a game. And then you'll see a game with an N next to it. By Netflix, you just click install, and then it'll ask you to then sign up. But hi, do you want to log in? And you log in, and away you go. But
it just seems bizarre to me.
But the only benefit is it's no ads, no extra feeds, or in-app purchases on Netflix. So you're getting the game 100%, but it's just bizarre because can download these games off the storefront right now, but you then have to sign in immediately, so it's a bit irritating. So someone, like I said, someone could find AC, I call it Infinity, for example, and think, hey, I'm getting ready to play it, and then get a big warning screen saying, hey, have you got Netflix? And I'm like, well, I didn't realise I needed it. So yeah
doesn't sound great to me. But let's wait and see, eh? All right, what have we got next?
So, from Dogfish Squad asks, who would you cast to play the antagonist in a live-action AC film or TV series? And if you could turn one AC game/book into a musical, which would it be?
Such a hard question. I really don't know film or TV well enough. I can't answer the first bit. Do you have any ideas?
I'm going to repeat what I said last time. I can't pronounce his name. Keanu Reeves.
Oh, okay. As the antagonist.
Hilarious. Like, we walk into a Templar office and he greets you all happy, smiley, like, oh, welcome to Abstergo. I will show you around. And then when Assassin's like, stolen artifacts, he's gone full John Wick on them. See? Perfect. He can be nicey-nicey Abstergo, but go full John Wick when you steal his Apple of Eden.
Yeah, that would be a nice sort of switcheroo, because everyone would be rooting for Keanu Reeves, but then it turns out he's the Templars, he's the bad guy.
Exactly. Pull the wool over their eyes, and it wouldn't be a con
like that.
It would be brilliant.
And the second part of the question?
Unity, Les Miserables style, and Syndicate, because holy hell, we need a duality between Jacob doing something stupid and then in a sing-song argument, Evie's just telling him off. Just perfect.
Oh,
like any style.
You could have murder ballads on stage. How cool would that
exactly.
be?
Exactly. And
awesome. I love that. It's perfect. Syndicate's perfect.
Starrick is already a comical Templar.
He is. He actually has a literal mustache he can twirl.
And that scene where Evie kicks him in the balls, he could do a Falesto and go high-pitched and singing. Perfect.
Oh my God, that's brilliant.
I swear I've not thought of this question too much.
It's perfect, mate. Syndicate it is. It could almost have a... I mean, it would be great, almost like a Chaz and Dave Cockney style, or you could blend it with almost, oh my God, what's the one? Sweeney Todd, you know?
Yes.
anyway, all right. What do we got next?
From Jordan York, they ask, favourite sports game?
Ah. This is really hard, Jordan, because as we discovered when we recorded this a few days ago, neither of us are that much into sports. I follow Formula One, although I must admit I'm not really enjoying the season so far this year. Declan, do you follow any sport?
No, I'm not British enough to follow sports. But I do have a favourite sports game.
That's a bit of a disappointing answer, unfortunately, for Jordan. Jordan, why don't you tell us what sport you like? And if it's Formula One, we can talk. Otherwise, it might be difficult.
Although I am enjoying Riders Republic. Does that count?
Ah, yes, you succumbed, didn't
yeah.
you?
Yeah. I managed to win it, so thank you to the person that was into the competition, but I'm starting to enjoy the fact of BMXing off a hill, doing a backflip, can-can, and then crashing. It always ends in crashing, I'll have you know. It's never backflip, can-can, land, it's backflip, clank-clank. Oh, there's a wall. Or,
You know, I thought that was free to play. And it was like season passes or, you know, different seasons that you could take part in. And I was going to download it and just have a go because a friend of ours, Jason, he really enjoys it. And he tells us a lot that he really enjoys it. And we appreciate him for that. But you have, it's a full, you know, it's a full game. And I just, couldn't spend the cash at the moment, but, you're enjoying
it. And
nice.
It's just nice. It's just nice to know what Jason's on about now. To know, to get a little insight when he's like, look at this cool trick. I'm like, I'm going to try that. Fail, but I'll try it.
Is it, what are you on a BMX bike or a skateboard or?
It's everything. Literally, there's BMX. I think there's a mountain bike, a racing bike. But I have no clue. It just goes fast down hills.
Okay.
There's snowboard. There's skis. There's a ski mobile. There's a hang glider. No, like a propeller with a parachute, parasailing. And then there's a rocket.
Wait, there's a snowboard.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, would it be like playing SSX all over again?
Have you ever
again?
Played Steep? No. Alright, well, yeah, SS is tricky. You can do, like, backflips, grind.
Awesome.
But because it's, like, an open-world multiplayer sort of game, you can switch on the fly. So I had fun yesterday where I was doing, like, a triple backflip on my BMX, and I fell off a cliff, and instead of just falling into the ground, I then quickly pressed up to change my sport, and change into a rocket ship, into, like, rocket glider, and just, like, rocket gliding off.
Nice.
I was like, that is smooth. And then before I land, you can like quickly change it back and then jump into a snowboard and go snowboarding.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, it is. I'm terrible at it, but it's cool.
That's the thing. Sometimes you just want a game to be fun. And if it makes you smile, that's great.
I think that's why I like it, because I'm terrible at it. But the fact that I can do a triple backflip off a snowboard and then just walk off a cliff and go into a hang glider, it's just cheesy fun. You know, you get a big grin on your face, like, that was fun. Let's try it again.
I could do with a game like that. I could do with a bit of fun. I'm about, I guess, well, we're actually going to come to this on a later question, so we'll come to this point again later. Yeah. Actually, do we have that? Because we were asked. Oh, yeah, it's at the bottom of the document. Sorry, no spoilers. We'll get there eventually. Right, what have we got next? Okay, this question, we got a couple of questions submitted by people who wanted to be anonymous. So we will ask those one at a time. So, first of all, beg your pardon, we've got a question from Scott Kane. So Scott asks, when you play Unity and you go through the different time rifts, do you think you're playing or you're exploring as ancestors or descendants of Arno?
So we did discuss this last time, and it's a disappointing answer, but we're actually just playing an avatar. Because the premise of them is, you know, rescue assassins that have got stuck in them Helix Rifts, and at this point in the series, Helix Rifts are just cloud-based DNA storage, which, in my opinion, is a snazzy idea for memories, but this is assassins that have got trapped. We have to take Avatar's skin into that game world to save the assassin. So I would love it if they were ancestors / descendants, because I'd think that would be one of the coolest threads to try, but sadly it's just basically an avatar. Yeah, Arno's really not human. He's just an avatar.
In some ways, yeah, that is how Unity presents the whole game, isn't it? But especially those rifts. Because the backstory here, at least the few years of the modern day running up to 2014, is that Abstergo are selling these Helix entertainment consoles to people who are then using them to play games. Liberation being the first product of Abstergo Entertainment. And through doing this, I think, if I remember rightly, Abstergo are doing this so that they can search people's memories, you know, at scale and find more ancestors, more assassins, more Templars, more pieces of Eden. So they've got this vast archive of people's memories. And I think it's that that they're using in the Helix system or in the Animus to build these rifts as we see them in Unity. So it's kind of, it was genuinely experienced by someone at some point, but it could be anyone, almost anyone in history on the planet, just because of the scale of Abstergo's data collection of DNA and genetic memories. That's how I understood it. But hey, if we got it wrong, please let us know, because it's been a while since I've looked at the details of the Helix project and so on. I've got to say, those rifts, I found them immensely challenging. I did complete them with the, you know, the 100% sync in order to get the 100% sync on Unity, but that was the hardest part of the game for me. Trying to get the right route through those sections to collect all the, it's not flags, is it? It's little data packets. You've got to collect all the data packets or get enough to get to 2,000 points or something. Yeah, I found that very challenging.
Yeah. I'm probably going to say this once and then we can move on to the next question. I didn't enjoy the rifts at all.
Me neither, really. I did them because I wanted 100% sync, but I didn't take any enjoyment. It was just annoying.
Let's just say Syndicate did it best.
With the Lydia Fry
rift.
Rift, you mean? Oh,
that's what they should have done with Arnold. Yeah. They should have been like, a nugget to Arnold's future, you know, even if it was just there, like the World War II Eiffel Tower, even if it was that mission, but in concrete law, that was Arnold's ancestor, I would have enjoyed it a little bit more because, like, oh, this is what Arnold's ancestor is going to do, so yay! Not, I'm just a virtual avatar. Mm.
It's, there have been some really interesting storytelling methods, haven't there, like Erudito in Liberation. I enjoyed, a lot of people don't like it, but I really enjoyed the Black Flag and Rogue, you know, with the iPad guy wandering around the office. I thought it was good to try something new and, you know, hack all these Abstergo computers and whatever. But the Lydia Fry segment, I think it's fantastic. It's one of my favourite standalone, if you like, set piece segments in the whole franchise. I really enjoyed it.
I agree.
We've got a question. This is one of our anonymous questions. So Anonymous asks, who would you rather save your life?
Edward. No, wait, no, Jacob. I want Jacob to save my life.
Okay, I'm going to say Cassandra.
Oh, then, yeah, the person who's kidnapped you is definitely screwed.
Exactly. She's got superpowers.
Exactly. No one can survive that.
I hope everyone knows when I say that Cassandra's got magical powers, they know I've got my tongue firmly in my cheek. I just want to make that really clear here. Because there's no magic in Assassin's Creed. All right, Anonymous has another question. Oh, no, this is one for you to ask. Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So this one's actually dedicated to you. Because they know I'm the diplomatic person, so there's no point asking me this question. Who's your favourite AZ character out of Sandra or Ezio?
It's interesting that Anonymous asked this specific question with these specific characters. Like I said earlier, Ezio's got a great story of from birth to death, you know, and it's really moving. It's a young man who's quite immature, and he matures and he gains wisdom and knowledge, and, you know, it's fantastic. I'm currently replaying AC2 on the Switch, just as my kind of casual. When I've got like half an hour, I'll just do a couple of memories. So it'll probably take me a few months to finish it, but I'm really enjoying going back to AC2. I am struggling with using the controller, but anyway, that's on me. But my heart will always say Cassandra, because that was the first game I played in the franchise, and that's where it all started. So out of those two, it's Cass, yeah.
I can understand that. And the last one for Anonymous would be, if we could cosplay, who would we cosplay as?
Ooh. Do you have an answer?
Always Jacob.
Okay. Good answer. Anyone else?
Edward. I could pull off the body.
Yeah, there's a lot of love for Edward tonight, isn't there? That's good. Who would you pick anyone from the dark side to cosplay as?
Oh, as a Templar. Haytham. Shay. me and Shay, because I'm half Irish, so maybe me and Shay.
Mm. Perfect.
Yeah, I'll go with Shay. Maybe me and Shay, we can bond.
I have one silly answer and then two kind of serious answers. So I wish I had the figure to cosplay as Arno, but I don't. So I would either cosplay as Sean, because why not? Standard history teacher attire, or Steed Bonnet. If I was going to go for historical costume, it'd be Steed Bonnet, because Steed's a legend. I love Steed Bonnet.
And so the next question is from Angel Hernandez. He asks, so we didn't know if we should throw this one in because it was put under our last YouTube video, but we thought it best to answer it anyways. So you guys aren't really fans of Assassin's Creed. You just like a few games and dismiss the rest.
Yeah, I'm not sure if Angel meant that seriously or not. Let's take the question at face value. We are really fans of Assassin's Creed. We love it. We talk about it and we think about it all the time. We've both played pretty much every game, and as we said, we over the last year or so, we're gradually trying to expand into more of the transmedia where we can. We like it so much that we probably invest 2 or 3 hours a week each in running this show. We are really fans of Assassin's Creed. That doesn't mean we like everything that Ubisoft and all of their partners have done equally, not at all. I mean, there's plenty of things that aren't so good, but, you know, being a fan of a franchise doesn't mean that you think everything is automatically excellent. Far better to have something constructive in terms of criticism to say than just say everything is brilliant. You just like a few games and dismiss the rest, not at all. One of the things about the show is we try to have a wide variety of topics. And as we said, covering more and more of the franchise where we can. So we sometimes do look back at the older games as we've had news about Mirage and, you know, various expansions for Valhalla. The show's been going for 3.5 years. So, you know, after or around the release of Valhalla and all the pre-release, as the news has come up with an episode on that, we do character deep dive episodes. We've done book reviews. We are very, very slowly. we must do Revelations next. We are very slowly kind of replaying the older games and doing revisited episodes. So we've done AC1, AC2, Brotherhood in January. So, you know, it's going to take us a while. Wouldn't surprise me if it takes another 18 months, but we are gradually revisiting all of the older games and just enjoying them for what they are and what they were and enjoying revisiting them. So, no, not at all. I think we are really fans of Assassin's Creed and we like pretty much all of the games. I'll tell you myself personally, I've played the 3 Chronicles games, but I found them to be quite hard. I think they're very demanding. I think they're very rewarding, but I haven't finished any of them because I kind of got stuck. So apart from things like Bloodlines, Altair's Chronicles, which I'm sure if you were really dedicated, you could find old DSs and whatever and play them. I think between you and me, we've played pretty much everything this franchise has to offer. So yeah, I think we are fans. Would you agree?
I would, and on the point of dismissing, I am going to say that sometimes when we are doing episodes and we compare back to all the games, we are in the episodes dismissive of them games in that episode, because if we did an episode on Syndicate, we mentioned Unity, we would dismiss the rest of Unity while we're talking about Syndicate, because the podcast episode is designed for just Syndicate. So if it comes across as dismissive, it's because we're trying to focus our limited time on just the specific topic, not revisit old games. So I've been playing for 15 years since 2007. I have tried the PSP and the DS games, so I wouldn't recommend playing them, but the DS one isn't that bad. So I think it's just a hard one, especially when you've got a show and you've got tons of knowledge to try and run around with.
Yeah. You can't cover everything in every episode, otherwise you'd never finish recording, would you? It'd be a permanent broadcast. All right, let's move on to the next question. So this is from Vass. What is your favourite stealth game besides Assassin's Creed?
It would be the vampire stealth game from 360 called Dark.
Okay, interesting. I don't know that one. Tell me more.
I'm trying to refresh my memory, but it's basically a newly turned vampire and you're just trying to get your grips in the world and find out this whole story. But you've got to use your abilities for stealth because getting into combat is nightmarishly hard. So you've got to use like different mechanics like stealth, crit, distractions, shapeshift, and use abilities to increase your speed. Just kind of jazzy stuff. And you're a vampire, so what's stealth as a vampire? Best combination, in my opinion. And yes, I'm biased on that one.
Awesome. That's a really good question, Vass. And I don't know if I've actually played that many other, you know, proper stealth games. The two that I think might be closest, even if in some ways they're quite different to Assassin's Creed, would be the Plague Tale games, Plague Tale Requiem, Plague Tale Innocence, and then Plague Tale Requiem. Especially Innocence, because you effectively, you don't stealth, you can stealth the entire game. There are, but you have to be incredibly careful about your movement and being detected, because you play as Amicia, who I think is 15 in the first game and 16 in the second game, and briefly as her little brother Hugo, who's 5. You know, these children cannot withstand any of the armored knights that hit them. So you get one hit from an enemy and you're dead. So you have to be very stealthy. You have to be really think ahead and use your environment. So I would count those as stealth games. I don't know if anyone else would, but I think Innocence is just I really enjoyed Innocence. It was a complete, I knew nothing about it other than it was the rat game, and I played it for the first time last summer or last autumn. It's probably 3 or 4 years old now, and I just thought it was fantastic. Really well made, really engaging story, great characters, really moving. It was excellent. Requiem takes it to a whole nother level. That Requiem was released towards the end of last year, and that's one of my most favorite games. Again, it gives you more options now in terms of how you approach each encounter, but it still has a heavy focus on stealth, and it's fantastic. I can't wait to replay it, to be honest. So, next we've got two questions from Lord Raylus, Mike, who we mentioned earlier, who does a lot of writing for the ones who came before. And in particular, he has an incredible piece of research, which is all of the transmedia in genetic memory order, which is fantastic, which is a great resource. So, Declan, are you ready for his first question?
Yes.
His first question is, why?
Because.
Good answer. I don't know whether he means this at a very deep and philosophical level, or does he mean it in the way that a 3-year-old means why when they first learn the word why?
Both.
So both, yeah, because, exactly. All right, thank you for that, Mike. And his second question is, what moment do you wish had more exploration in the story of an Assassin's Creed game?
All of Liberation, especially the Eradator yes. moments, because, you know, that's just one of those things that happen and now we don't hear about it anymore. It's like, come on, let's have some more of that.
Yeah, Liberation is a great game. it's a slightly wonky remaster or port to PC, but there's so much potential there. New Orleans is a great city to explore and parkour through. Aveline's got a very, you know, got interesting but a nice simple linear story. She's got a range of stealth tools. I think it's great, and I wish it had a full remaster. Not a remaster. I'd love it, that game, to have a full remake from the ground up, start again. Because there's a lot of potential there, I think.
I agree.
All right. What we got next?
So this is from Louise. There's three questions. So first one would be, James, have you had that self-care day you promised us you'd take following the community relief fundraiser?
Ah, yes. Right. So, as we mentioned earlier, and if you've listened to the show, you might remember back in... Do you know, it's weird. It kind of feels like a distant dream. But yeah, we ran a community relief fundraiser, which was a two-week series of live streams to raise money for the victims, the families who were affected by the earthquake in Syria and Turkey, and all the funds went to Save the Children and their work in that region. And Arshak from AC Landmarks and I, we kind of became project managers. It wasn't really planned that way, but it just kind of happened. And he and I, we probably did, I would guess, I mean, it varied, but we probably did between 2 and 6 hours of work per day on this project every day for a month. I mean, in addition to our day jobs and family and things, you know, other things. So it was a lot of effort and a lot of energy. It was very rewarding. We had a huge team of volunteers who also put in countless hours, some in the background, some in the foreground. We had a huge team of streamers and moderators who kept everything running. Really great support from Ubisoft and all of our partners. It was a fantastic thing to bring together and deliver. You know, for a fantastic cause. But I must admit, by the end of it, and that's why we took a break from the podcast, really, wasn't it? At the end of it, I needed a break. And I did say that I should go and, you know, have a nice bubble bath, put the cucumbers in my eyes, and just generally relax. I didn't do that exact self-care day, Louise, to answer your question. I did. I definitely had some time of basically not talking to anybody and just talking to my family, and it was really nice. But yeah, I didn't have any cucumbers on my eyes. All right, that's that question. What next, Declan?
Is there anything you said in an episode you'd like to see other people in the community respond to out of curiosity or different perspective?
What's that? What do you think?
I think all of it. You know, as a podcast, I'm always interested in hearing what everyone else has to say, so my DMs and emails are always open, so I can't really take a single moment out, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Is there anything you've said that you'd like to see? Honestly, I enjoy hearing different opinions. And, you know, there are lots of people out there with interesting ways of looking at characters, stories, motivations, gameplay. I kind of like listening to all of it because I like just listening to people explain their thoughts and why they like what they like or why they don't like what they don't like. And you don't have to agree with it, but it's just nice to listen to people talk through their thinking. What I would say generally is if you're listening to our episodes and you think we're wrong, or if you have a different opinion or a rebuttal, feel free to leave a comment on the YouTube video, or you can reply to the Q&A if you listen through Spotify, or you can join our Discord and have a chat with us there. Always interested to listen to other opinions. That's one of the reasons why we have so many guests on, isn't it? Because we like listening to people's stories and their experiences. But I can't think of anything specific, Louise. I mean, we had a really good conversation in our last episode with Jody and Amit, looking back at the Leila Hassan trilogy, and Jody in particular speaks very passionately about her experience of Valhalla's story and storytelling. How does it tell its story? And that was, again, I didn't enjoy Valhalla, but she really did, and she spoke really well about why it's so good. And it did make me realize, yeah, there's a lot here, but for me it just kind of went over my head. But that's a me problem, you know.
The next one would be For I Found the Tree. What do you think happened there? Fill in the blanks.
Right. So, Cecily and Ethan Fry have twins, Evie and Jacob. I think Evie's born first, isn't she?
I think so, yeah.
By a few minutes. Now, Evie marries Henry Green. They go off to India. And then there's nothing in the family tree until Lydia, who is active in the First World War. Now, Lydia marries, and we had to look this up last time while we were recording, and I've already forgotten it. I need to look up his name. It's Sam something.
Carter, I think it was.
Sam. I'm going to have to look it up again on the wiki. Hold on a sec.
See? Wiki,
this is the worst episode.
Wiki ever. Comes in handy. It harkens back to our first questions.
Yeah. Lydia Fry. Sam Crowder. So Lydia marries Sam Crowder just before, or just after the outbreak of World War One. She is the granddaughter of Jacob Fry. So Lydia Fry is her great aunt. But as to what happened in between, I have no idea. What I find interesting, if we're to really pick apart the bones of this story, when we see Jacob in Jack the Ripper DLC 1888, I think, he doesn't look well, and his house appears to be a very run down, unless that's just like a sort of secret operating base, and really he has a fancy house somewhere else in London or in Crawley or who knows, back in South Wales where his family comes from originally. If that's his house, then he appears to be a man living alone. So I don't know what has happened there in terms of his relationships with other men or other women. Because, things do not seem to be going well for Jacob Fry in 1888.
I wouldn't know how to answer it. So let's just say man falls in love with woman and birds and bees.
Oh my god, Declan, I've just realised. Okay, Louise, so you asked us a question about a rebuttal or a podcast response. Now, those of you listening might know, Louise has been on the show many times. She has her own podcast called The Rookery's Archives. Louise, I'd like to listen to your episode where you break down the Fry family tree. And look forward to listening to
it. I'll be there as well, listening. Next one, kind of an impossible question. Digestives, chocolate on top or bottom? My answer will be...
We need to explain what a digestive is first.
It's a malt wheat cookie, because biscuits is different in America, apparently. So it's a malt wheat cookie with chocolate on the top. Unless you open the packet upside down, then the chocolate's on the bottom.
Indeed. So if you're British, it's a biscuit. If you're American, it's a cookie. And they're amazing. I would say the chocolate is always on the top. Anyone that eats a digestive with the chocolate on the bottom is questionable. Very questionable.
And this is where Declan's caveman instincts comes in, and he eats a digestive however it is in his hands, be it sideways. The chocolate is either to the side, on top, or the bottom when I eat it.
All right. And what was Louise's... Louise, this is a silly question. Oh, you're going to cause an argument. What is Louise's final question?
Do you pronounce it GIF or JIF? GIF. I'm dyslexic, so it has to be GIF.
Yeah. I know that the guy that invented GIFs said they were to be pronounced JIF, but then it should have started with a J, in my opinion. So it's a GIF.
But it's just how weird the English language is. A G can be both G or G.
Because
it's change and it's grr. English language.
Yeah, absolutely. All right.
The next is from Zark, and he asks, was there ever a point in the series where you went, I want it that way, or tell me why? I had to.
I'm thinking of the Brooklyn Nine-Nine episode where the people on the lineup have to sing that to Jake Peralta. Anyway, that's easy, Zark. That's the death of Elise in the crypt underneath the temple. That ripped my heart out and cut it into a million pieces. And I thought she should live. What about you, Declan?
Well, for the first part, I want it that way would be Valhalla's mythology, because that's how I want it.
Nice.
Tell me why. I don't know. I can't remember what I said to that one. I'm going to have to give that one a miss because I wouldn't know what to put. Sorry.
No worries. I'll ask Zark's next question because he's got like a multi-part set of questions here. So Zark's next question is, what are some of your musical headcanons, or what songs from other media make you think of Assassin's Creed, or what songs inspire you when making fan creations like art or virtual photography?
Metal. Rock and metal.
Got it.
But I have a lot of headcanons. I have like, as is said with the sea shanties, I don't really listen to them back flag. Instead, I listen to Metallica's For Whom the Bells Toll, because that's just really good music for slaying hundreds of dudes to. Musical little headcanon, Disturbed's Unstoppable really sounds like a song that if you took every montage of Assassin's Creed people fighting, the song would just fit perfectly. Nice. Last part, Nickelback. I always listen to Nickelback when I'm doing virtual photography. Especially the song Photograph.
Now, this is the point when the boomer in the room has to say, I know none of that. So I'm just going to nod and go, interesting.
Interesting.
Okay.
I'd recommend Nickelback to you. I don't know why, but...
All right. I'll have a listen out of respect, but I'm going to guess probably not, but out of respect, I will listen to it. I'm going to answer your question, Zark, and say, and I'm going to be very brief, I don't have any musical headcanons. I don't really think of songs from other media that would inspire me to think of Assassin's Creed, and I don't use any music. I haven't actually done much virtual photography recently, but I do enjoy it as a bit of casual fun, and I've never even thought of using a song or anything to inspire it, which I guess makes me quite boring, but there we are.
His last one, what do you think of Abstergo's in real life counterparts? And all I can say on this is I did not know it was a real thing till I saw Zark posting messages about it.
Yeah, I hadn't made this connection either, but yes, in the lore, Henry Ford is one of the founding members, or one of the, I guess, the key decision makers who they switch the Order of the Templar Knights to become Abstergo. So, you know, from that extension, Ford, the automotive company, is the real world, one of the real world successors, and I guess you could say front operations for Abstergo's work. I mean, in the lore, they have a huge medical equipment business, obviously Abstergo Entertainment, who make video games, and the Helix system, and the Brahman VR headset. But yeah, honestly, a lot of this stuff I'd actually forgotten until I saw Zark's question. He has a follow-up question. What do you think of Abstergo Automotive's latest developments, the Bronco and Bronco Sport, the Mach-E, the F-150 Lightning, the 7th Gen Mustang, and the Red Bull Powertrains 2026 partnership? Declan.
Cargo Broom. That's the extent of my knowledge. Cargo Broom, Hot Wheels Go Vroom. That's about it. I'm sorry. I'm terrified of cars most of the time, so...
Yeah, this is so Zark is in the US. Now, cars in the US are very different to cars in Europe generally. We do have Ford here, of course, but none of what Zarg listed in his question do I recognise. I have heard of Mustangs. They're not very common in the UK, I can tell you that. So I can't really tell you anything about Broncos, Mach-Es, F-150 Lightnings, or 7th Gen Mustangs. I have a very nice XC40, which is a lovely car to drive, but it's nothing like any of these. The Red Bull Powertrains one is interesting because that's a Formula One reference. And I've obviously missed the news. I didn't realise Ford were getting back into Formula One in partnership with Red Bull. So that is interesting. It's good to have Ford back, although really I'd love to have Cosworth back. But I'm guessing that's not going to happen. Anyway. All right. What have we got next? We've got a couple of shorter questions. So, Marco from Access the Animus. What would be your favourite Scandinavian location for a holiday trip?
I've always wanted to go to Denmark. Or Norway. Mm. I don't know if I have to go to Norway or Denmark. Anywhere in them countries, I'll get a dartboard, put a map of Denmark or Norway and throw a dart at it and go there.
I'm going to split the difference and say Stockholm.
Stockholm would be good.
Yeah. I don't know why. I just know that there's lots of islands and water and it looks nice. Nice for a sailing trip.
That would be nice, actually.
All of Scandinavia looks nice, let's be honest.
That's why I want to go. It looks pretty. Maybe to go camping. Oh my god, camping, not hiking.
You might have to watch out for midges at the wrong time of the year, though, if you're camping.
I'll go when it's cold.
Perfect. Yeah, that's the best solution. All right. And next question is from Jason. This is a silly question. Here we go. The newer games have us using Eagle Vision, Odin Sight, etc., always through the eyes of a bird. Would you like to see them expand this to other animals? If so, what animals, and why would it be a capybara?
Can I follow this up with a question?
Yep.
Jason, would you be interested, and I'm not making this up, but doing a podcast where we make animal camouflage to assassins? It could be fun. Because Edward would have a capybara. Definitely. They're adorable, they're cute, and they're the perfect spying things ever. Because people are looking and go, it's just a capybara. Let's ignore it. But it'll know your darkest secrets.
They are super cute, aren't they?
But
yeah.
I would love to see, I don't know. Maybe Jacob and Evie would have a Rottweiler or something.
I don't know. I wouldn't mind capybara vision. That'd be quite good fun. you send your capybara sort of a ground-based drone into a bandit camp to scout out the...
You could beg for treats. So that's your social blending, begging for treats. Perfect. Yeah.
That'd be so funny. All right. We have one question remaining.
And it is from White Wolf Whispers. She asks, Witcher question, are you okay with going into people's houses and stealing everything that isn't nailed down just to fund your Witcher habit?
Right. So, I have a multi-part answer to this. I think this is addressed to me. Have you finished Witcher?
I played half of it.
Okay, that's probably where I am now, roughly. So, I've done White Orchard, I have explored Velen, and I have found out what happened to, what's the bloody Baron's name? Philip Strenger's wife and daughter. And I really enjoyed that Velen section of, exploring and doing Witcher stuff, killing monsters. I like just walking through a world and exploring and finding stuff. I'm now in Novigrad, and I'm trying to find Dandelion. And I'm going to be honest with you, Witcher fans, I'm finding this part of the story rather drags. I've been dipping in and out over the last week, and yeah, you know, you're finding a person to find the person to find the person to find the person who knows where Dandelion is, and it's just, can we just get to the point and get on with it? Anyway, so I guess I'm about halfway through. We'll see how it goes. Are you okay going into people's houses? Yes and no. So if it's a poor person's house and they've got nearly nothing, I don't steal from them. But if I go into a very nicely appointed house in Oxenfurt or Novigrad and I think they can spare a coin or two, yes, I will loot it. Although, now this might be controversial, I have bought very little and I've crafted nothing so far. I don't know if that's good or bad, but yeah, I haven't felt the need. I keep looting better gear, so I just replace my gear gradually, and yeah, I haven't really needed to spend much money apart from repairing my swords occasionally. So this is the point when someone will come into the comments and say, bro, you are not playing Witcher properly, which is entirely possible. But yeah, I haven't needed to spend a lot of money so far.
I feel bad now. I'm just a magpie. If I see it, if it's not nailed down or in a chest, I steal it. I'm evil.
Well, I'm trying to roleplay as a good witcher, you know? Like a Robin Hood.
Oh, I just roleplay as, I want it, I keep it. I'm terrible at these games.
Oh, no, I don't think you... Well, maybe you can be terrible, but I don't think so. It's okay to roleplay, you know, your own way.
I think, like, when I play RPGs like Skyrim, I always replay the good guy saving the day. But, you know, once you've trekked from one city to another and you're pretty hungry and there's a bit of cheese in someone's house, you know, just steal the cheese. They're not going to mind. It's not in a chest, so it must not be an important piece of cheese. So, yeah.
That's true. I've looted a lot of dumplings recently, I can tell you that, and chicken sandwiches. Everyone in Novigrad is eating chicken sandwiches and dumplings.
There you go, you're getting free meals. You got to keep your Witcher body fit and healthy.
Exactly.
Keep your coins for your coins for your swords, and then steal the food that's not nailed down.
I will say one thing. I looted some crates in the city, and I did it in front of a guard, and I got into a fight, and they killed me very quickly, and I lost like 1,000 crowns, which I was really annoyed about because I got about 4,000 crowns in my purse. So I did the sensible thing. I reloaded from a previous save, which I'd taken only a few minutes before.
That is genius.
So, yeah, my money is intact, and I won't be looting in front of the guards again. But that was quite fun.
When I looted in Skyrim for the first time and got caught, my sensible option was, in Skyrim you can either pay the fine, you can fight, or you can go to jail. And I went to jail, and I did the most respectful thing. I broke out of jail, looted all my stuff back.
Nice.
Looted the king's food and left. double played them.
That's brilliant. Yeah, yeah. Well, it's an open world game. You play it how you want.
Exactly.
I guess.
Well, if I'm gonna steal a bit of chicken, you're gonna put me in jail for it. I'll steal your chicken.
So yes, I hope to finish Witcher. I mean, it's gonna take me a while, but I want to finish Witcher, and then I'm going to go back to Horizon Forbidden West because the expansion... I mean, we're recording this on the 17th. I think the expansion, Burning Shores, is released in a couple of days. Something like that. And, yeah, I want to finish my new game plus and then go straight into the expansion. So, see how that goes.
Sounds brilliant.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm really looking forward to going back to Horizon. All right. That's all the questions. So we should close the show. But first of all, say thank you to everyone for submitting the questions. It's been fun to do something a bit different and just have a really random selection of different questions. Some about the you know, Assassin's Creed, some not. And yeah, we love to hear your feedback. If you want to fire us questions in the future, we want to make this more interactive, don't we?
Yeah.
And listen to comments, respond to comments. So yeah, please... let us know your thoughts, leave us your comments, and yeah, we want to do more of this and more interactivity in the future.
And thank you all again, and if you do want to submit questions or you have some thoughts, you can message us on Twitter at ACLetsTalk. Our account's always open for DMs. Or you can tag me and James at James Lillenquin in any post, and we'll try and respond. Our emails are always the best way to get in touch with us. I check them 4 times a day. It's assassinscreedletstalk@gmail.com. Any emails come through, I will read and respond as best as possible. And thank you all for joining, and we'll see you all next week.
See you all soon. And